Welcome to the Wrestling Brethren Podcast. This is episode 391. Tonight, we talk wrestling news and AEW Dynamite. On the final live stop before Revolution, with me tonight are Seth Zillman and Jared Aubrey. And fellas, how the hell are you?
Well, if you were a fan of the Nitro era Sting, there's probably a lot to like about AEW this week, at least on Dynamite. So, ready to talk about it.
Finally, this long week is almost over. I get to go back to normal tomorrow. Let's talk some wrestle first, shall we?
I was kind of a fan more of Surfer Sting, because that's who I grew up on, but that's neither here nor there, because unless he pulls a rabbit out of a hat on Sunday, I'm sure we're not going to see that before he retires. Yeah.
I think he did one meet and greet with the Surfer look, and it, you know, obviously he didn't dye his hair, he didn't bleach his hair, but you know, it didn't look quite right.
Okay, so today we had Tony Khan and his media call for Revolution. And a couple of highlights out of there that he says he's interested in doing 9 pay-per-views per year, including 3 Ring of Honor pay-per-views. Now, I also saw something that said on top of the 9 pay-per-views. So it's either 9 or 12, depending on how you interpret whatever it was he said. And they recently filed a trademark for Dynasty, or AEW Dynasty, and that is the reported April pay-per-view that we're going to get before Double or Nothing in May. He also said that he thinks by 2025, that'll be the year that AEW goes from startup company to established challenger in wrestling. I'm like, unless you're hiring a booking committee and some other people to make decisions other than you, probably not. But hey, that's just one fella's opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would severely question the logic of doing a pay-per-view the same month as Mania for obvious reasons. I mean, yes, most people watch Mania on a streaming service now and don't pay the extra money, but it's also 2 days. And you want to add another show that's probably going to be 3-4 hours in length. I know it's not competing as far as money, but certainly competing for time, at least as far as fans' time. That said, I think I understand why they do it. This is going to sound like I'm defending it, but I'll be honest with you. I'm probably not going to watch all these pay-per-views because there's only so many funds in your bank account and all that jazz. But I guess the best way to try to say it, I mean, and I'm making these numbers up. These are not real numbers. But let's say you do 5 shows a year at 150,000 pay-per-views buys per show. So that'd be what, about 750,000 buys. If you do 10 pay-per-views and you lose some buys each time, but say you get 100,000 for 10 shows, well, that's still a net increase, isn't it? And I think that's why they do it. It's, you could call it milking the hardcore fans or whatever you want. Again, I'm not defending it. I'm just saying I think that's why they do it, because the hardcore fans are still going to keep dipping their hand into the jar, so to speak. So I personally don't like it, but I see why they're doing it.
Well, that's the current model that WWE uses, and perhaps Tony Khan thinks that if he's going to compete, then that's what he needs to do too. Again, not defending it, but that's perhaps a thought that's going on there. I personally like the lower number of pay-per-views because it does give you more time to deliver some thoughtful stories. The only problem with that is, I'm going to harp on this again, it's just the roster is so damn big, you just can't do that with everybody. So by the time you get to the pay-per-view, you've got, you know, your core of regular big name folks that you put on the paper, your narrative also gets to sit aside and then not show up on TV because they're not building anything towards the pay-per-view. So they're in that kind of vicious circle where it's, well, we need to get people on TV to for them to stay relevant, but you know, they're not big enough to make the big shows. So maybe they feel they need to do more shows in order to do that. I don't know. I think it's a wild and terrible circle. And yeah, you know, the roster issues. And if TK thinks that he's going to book additional shows with the roster that he has, the man needs some help. And I'm not saying that derogatorily. It's that he needs, like you said, he needs a booking committee or he needs a team around him to help with that, because he cannot manage a roster that size on his own.
I'll just simply add, when it comes to the number of pay-per-views, I always liked the 4 per year. You basically had one for each season. I think that's a pretty easy schedule to follow, but that's just me.
You would think. But no one ever accused Tony Khan of not being adventurous. Mm-hmm. So we have an update on the Rock IP, which is also known as The Rock's Intellectual Property. This was part of his bonus, I guess, or contract negotiations when he became a member of the board of TKO. He got ownership of several catchphrases and terminologies related to his character. Well, thanks to USA Today, we have that full list of everything The Rock owns that falls under Rock IP. And it includes the signature tagline of, "If you smell what The Rock is cooking," as well as Jabroni, the Brahma Bull, the Samoan Sensation, which I've never heard him referred to as, the Great One. He owns Know Your Role and Shut Your Mouth, and Rock Bottom. He owns Rocky Maivia, Team Corporate, Rock Nation, The Nation, Rudy Poo, Candy Ass, The Blue Chipper, The People's Champion, The Great One, Team Bring It, Just Bring It, The People's Elbow. Finally, The Rock has come back to ... It doesn't matter what. Blue Hell, The Millions, Millions, Rockpocalypse, Project Rock, and the most electrifying man in sports and entertainment. He owns all of that stuff.
Wow.
That just blows my mind. That is almost worth more than the $30 million he signed for.
I don't even think you need to say almost.
Well, I mean, think of all the merch he can create.
My brain is spinning on that list, and I heard the one like Project Rock. I don't think I ever saw that in WWE, but of course he does stuff with Under Armour called Project Rock. So, okay, that's right. Interesting.
Which means WWE owned it previously.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is an exhaustive and interesting list, to say the least. And it's all owned by Dwayne Johnson.
Huh.
All right, so moving on to Dynamite. Once again, I've seen highlights. I tried to work in the show and it just didn't work out, at least in full. I did see the opening segment in full and the ending segment in full. So I will be winging the details and hopefully my memory will not fail me. The show opened with Hangman Adam Page and his one crutch and his poor limp coming to the ring, saying that he will not be at Revolution because of his ankle injury that we already established is a work. So then he's joined in the ring by Swerve Strickland, and Swerve cuts a promo probably the most babyface promo I've ever heard since this double turn. I never thought I would hear his character say something along the lines of, "Oh, well, I did a lot of things to you, but I never meant for this to happen." And I'm like, dude, you're the guy that broke into his house and threatened his baby.
Yep.
I'm like,
he cut a promo on an infant.
Yeah. It's like, jeez. It's like, we're just going to gloss over that. And then they're interrupted by Samoa Joe, who, of course, is Samoa Joe, and cuts a great promo, short and sweet. And then Swerve says that now that it's one-on-one, he's going to win the title, and maybe Joe can go back to color commentary in a poncho. Nice little WrestleMania reference. And then he's thwacked in the back by Hangman and his crutch, who's now hopping around the ring. And I don't mean on one foot. I mean on both feet, bouncing around, showing that he has no injury. And he just wanted to get one up on Swerve. And I guess he swerved Swerve. So it is still a triple threat for the world title on Sunday. And that was the opening segment.
Mm-hmm. Was and kind of a little talking heavy. I mean, because AEW usually doesn't start with the talking segments. Usually they start with a match. So I guess it's a little refreshing to do it that way. But it was definitely a modern wrestling thing. I suspected, even if I didn't hear of the talk of the injury being a work, I still would have had my suspicions just by the way Hangman was just kind of hanging back and standing behind Swerve, because you notice that almost every time you get a turn, the person doing the turning stands behind the other person for obvious reasons, because they're about to do a bad thing.
Yep.
So I was suspicious just watching that.
Then we had a backstage segment with Matthew and Nicholas Jackson as they are looking for Sting, and they're dressed up in their fancy clothes, and they have white ceramic baseball bats, like they're the good guys compared to Sting and his black baseball bat. So that's a segment. That's a segment that was started here, and a thread that went throughout the night is that the Bucks are looking for Sting. And we had our first match as the Blackpool Combat Club defeated FTR and Eddie Kingston in a good match. And with BCC and FTR, you can really rarely have a bad match.
Yeah, all those guys are good.
Chris Jericho in a backstage segment talking about his history with Atlantis Sr. all those years ago, and he will be taking on his son, Atlantis Jr. Chris Jericho wrestling former opponent's kids just reminds me of that Nolan Ryan stat of those people he struck out. Seven of those major leaguers had sons who grew up to be major leaguers and also struck out against Nolan Ryan. Chris Jericho is starting to enter Nolan Ryan category.
Yeah, it was like, I think it was Sergeant Slaughter had said he wrestled Cowboy Bob Orton, Cowboy Bob Orton Jr. and Randy Orton. He's wrestled all three generations of Orton.
Yeah. Will Ospreay made his Dynamite debut after finishing his commitments with New Japan, so he is full-time All Elite. He was then joined by Don Callis and his family, and they were promoting the match for Sunday of Will Ospreay versus Takeshita. And you can totally see that they're going to have Will either be a babyface or he's going to just be on his own, because I don't see him affiliated with the Don Callis family for very long.
Yeah. That's one of those things. It's obvious, but in a good way, because you want to see it.
Right. Eddie Kingston was being interviewed backstage by Renee, interrupted by Matthew and Nicholas as they're still looking for Sting. They start talking to Eddie. They're like, "Guy, you're a champion. Why don't you start dressing better? Do you think we need to implement a dress code?" And we're just kidding. Do what you do. We're still looking for Sting. Stinger. And I'm like, Could they be any more condescending? Anyway, Orange Cassidy then defeated Nick Wayne to retain the international title, and Nick Wayne came down to the ring in a brand new t-shirt that says Christian is my father. Sky Blue defeated Chris Statlander. Another backstage segment with Matthew and Nicholas arriving at what they thought was Sting's locker room. They open the door and it's a bunch of black baseball bats tied from the ceiling, and Sting is playing mind games. In the main event match of the night, Chris Jericho defeated Atlantis Jr., as if there was any question. And then in the final segment, Matthew and Nicholas come down to the ring. They're tired of looking for Sting. They're going to call him out in the ring. And there's a handful of, I guess, Sting lookalikes. And one of them turns out to be Darby Allin in disguise. But Darby starts getting beaten up by the baseball bat wielding brothers. And then they wave somebody from the back. They wave them to come to the ring. And all of a sudden, the Nature Boys music plays. And Ric Flair takes 25 years to get down to the ring, which would, in theory, make him 100. But recently turned 75, Ric Flair gets in the ring. And he gives the thumbs up to the Young Bucks as they're holding Darby Allin for Ric to take a swing with the baseball bat. But instead, double swerve. Ric sticks a thumb in Matthew's eye and he hits Nicholas with probably one of the slowest punches you'll ever see. And I don't know if Rick's doing this on purpose. I know he's 75 now, but good God, he moves in slow motion now. The Bucks hit him with a low blow and then they start laying waste to Ric Flair. And then Sting's music plays and Shivani creams himself. And Matthew and Nicholas take the baseball bats. They walk up the ramp to meet Sting in the rampway. And all of a sudden, descending from the rafters, it's Sting, as Seth alluded to, circa Nitro days. Now, I didn't care for this. For the obvious reason, I think this is the first time this has happened since Owen, and he's 62. And it's worse than Bryan Danielson getting hit in the neck or landing on his neck, or Adam Copeland for that matter. I don't care for it. I don't think it needs to be done. But off my soapbox for that opinion, but Sting comes down, Darby Allin all of a sudden comes to and helps Sting beat up the Bucks. Darby hits a coffin drop off the top rope, and Sting hits a Scorpion's death drop, and he's laying waste to the Bucks with his bat and their baseball bats. And I'm gonna steal a line from Seth here. What took Sting so long? Why didn't he come when Darby was getting his brains beat in? So if they wanted to turn Darby heel, there's a perfect plot point right there. That's how Dynamite went off the air.
Yeah. Obviously, I liked the Sting rappelling down much better than you did, but that's okay. I hope they don't do a Darby turn at the pay-per-view, but that's just me. We'll save that for the prediction show, but There was some good stuff with the show. The stuff that just wasn't as interesting, but for me that go home angle with Sting, I thought was just fine. So I was happy with it.
As I mentioned, that is the last live show before Revolution, as Rampage is normally pre-recorded, and I guess because they have pay-per-view setup to do, Collision was also pre-recorded. So tomorrow is Friday, and we will be doing our Revolution predictions as well as our SmackDown recap, because there's a certain fellow with some intellectual property who will be on the show. I have a feeling that Revolution may shake up our prediction standings because it's not as cut and dry as it used to be in the beginning. I think the mind of TK has ruined my prediction powers.
Well, hopefully I can keep my string of barely keeping up with AEW and then going like 7-1 in the pay-per-view.
Or we'll all be 4-4. Who knows? All right. Any final thoughts?
No, I think we covered it all. Revolution is looking to be pretty darn good. And it'll be interesting to see the next step in the build to WrestleMania for WWE.
Yeah, I got some catching up to do, which it looks like I'm going to do on Saturday to get prepped. Watch the pay-per-view here. I'm going to do some research. Interested to find out what's going on.
So you're going to prep after we make our predictions?
Well, no, I'll do that first, but actually go and like watch all the highlights and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
I thought you were just giving the win to Seth or myself.
Oh, yeah, no. I'm not going down without a fight, lads. This is not how it works.
He's going to go to the wheelofnames.com and he's going to put in each match participant. He's going to spin the wheel, make the deal, and he's going to get a prediction winner.
Jesus. No, I'm going to go to Sports Kita and get all my predictions.
Oh, boy. Jarrett, 0-10.
Hashtag nope.
All right. Well, my final thought is kind of a production note. Tomorrow, as we're recording, is March 1st. And we will have completed 2 months of our new format here on the podcast. And while I think it has helped us keep current with news and television, I do think we are a little bit stale in that we're just kind of a recap show now. And I think we've kind of lost our personality for the show. So we're going to start injecting some things moving forward. We won't do it tomorrow because it's a prediction show, but probably next week. We're going to start by bringing back an old segment that we used to do pretty frequently. And we're going to bring, as long as there's not like 17 news items, we're going to bring back Sound Off starting next week. So for you longtime listeners, you will recall the segment, and for those that are new listeners, you will be introduced to it, and we might change up some of the rules, put a little new spin on it. We will see, but we'll get that started and up and running next week.
Yeah, but until then, in short, I like to call it just cut a promo about anything you want.
Yep, pretty much, positive or negative. So until then, once again, thank you for listening, downloading, and subscribing, and we will talk to you next time. Thank you for listening to this episode. You can subscribe to the Wrestling Brethren podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast fix to hear the latest discussion from the Wrestling Brethren. Visit the mothership, if you will, at twbpodcast.com, the online home of the Wrestling Brethren podcast. Let us know your thoughts, questions, and comments on Twitter/X at twbpshow, on Facebook at facebook.com/behindthesquaredcircle, and on Instagram at the Wrestling Brethren. You can follow Jarrett on Twitter/X at the Bacon Rev. You can follow Seth at Lord Xandrax, and you can follow Josh at Southpaw Josh. Thank you again for listening, and we will talk to you soon with more from the Wrestling Brethren.